سلام خوش آمدید.
مرحبا اهلا وسهلا.
ناشنیکا خوانیان حمیدا.
سلام علیکم شرغلا.
اولا بینوینیدوس.
Здравствуйте, добро пожаловать.
Hello. Welcome to our podcast DLI FLC Lingo. I'm here in the recording studio talking with four DLI students, one from each branch. There's Air Force Airman First Class Tanner Cope, Army Specialist Nafisa Kabir, Marine Lance Corporal Joseph Villalobos, and from the Navy, CTI Chris Moyer. We're doing a podcast series on getting to know DLI. Each episode, I'm interviewing a different group of people to give you an idea of what it's like to live and work here in Monterey.
I am Specialist Nafisa Kabir. I am about to turn 24 next month. I'm in the Army and I'm from Miami most recently, you could say. That's where my parents have a house. That's where my husband and I have lived for a little bit now. But I've really lived all over the United States and I don't really call any place home unless my parents are there, I guess. Because that's where I know I can always like fly home to. And so that's why I say I'm from Miami.
Okay. So how long have you been at DLI?
I have been at DLI, gosh, I don't know. I think I got here either like late June or early July, or maybe not. Something like that. So, I don't know, like 6, 7, 8, 9, 9-ish months now, okay. Presumably.
And you've been in school that whole time?
So like that minus a month, I guess. So 8 months.
Yeah,
time here flies super weirdly. Because, like, when you're in class, it's super... The days are long, but the days are also super short. But the weeks are shorter, but they're also super long. I don't know.
You know, it's funny. Actually, Tanner was just talking about that. So, Tanner, go ahead. Tell me about yourself.
Yeah, I'm A1C Tanner Cope. I'm from Fort Walton Beach, Florida. I got here at DLI late September of last year. So, about 6 months. But I'm only 15 weeks into class, so next week I'll be a quarter of the way through my program. And yeah, she's absolutely right. It's somehow like standing still and flying by at the same time, and you never have enough time to do anything.
Chris, you finished, right? So tell me about yourself.
Yeah, I'm Seaman Chris Moyer. I started class originally in May of 2020, yeah. End of May. I graduated. I passed. I actually just picked up my associates right before I came here.
Nice.
So that's cool. And yeah, just like them, it's been forever. At least it feels that way.
Okay. And Joseph, tell me about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm Lance Corporal Joseph Villalobos. I've been at DLI since 2021 of April, but I didn't start class until the end of May. Same thing, I'm graduating at the end of May, so I've only got about 9 weeks left till the DOPT, which is pretty nerve-wracking, but just gotta stay calm, grind through. Definitely like she was saying, like the weeks, that's like kind of what I judge time by. I'm like, oh, I just gotta make it to Friday, just gotta make it to Friday. And then you kind of look back and you're like, oh man, I've already been through like 40 Fridays, like, but it feels like nothing. But you look back and you're like, I've done so much. But I mean, it also kind of applies to the language. You're like, have I really learned anything? And then it's like, you'll wake up and be like, what, do I even know this? And then you go to class and be like, okay, yeah, I kind of know this.
Actually, but. That leads to another question because we were talking about imposter syndrome. Mm. So is that, I mean, do you know what that is?
Yeah. Is it almost like you're acting?
Yeah. Okay. Your answer was good too. Okay, so tell me what you think.
Honestly, I feel like every day I wake up and I'm putting on a costume. I just happen to call it like my duty day uniform, right? And I go to class and I'm doing all these little things. And it just doesn't feel real. I feel like it's not real to me yet, but I'm, like, this is a career. I still feel like I'm still in college or something. Because it's like college here, right? And so the fact that I have a title of soldier, I don't even know what that means. So the imposter syndrome, I think, is definitely there. Because, I don't know, every day I wake up and I'm learning something. And I think that's what makes... you know, this place super unique. It's because it's not like any other duty station or any other training center. It's a college, you know, it's the military liberal arts college. That's what it is. yeah. And I just, I don't, it doesn't feel like, you know, I'm serving my country in any meaningful way sometimes, because, you know, I'm just here learning a language. But I guess at the end of the day, we're doing something important. And I'm in this, like, in-between where I don't know if I'm really a soldier, if I'm still in a civilian kind of mentality. Because, again, it's a language. I'm in school 8 hours a day, you know?
Yeah, until you get to the real army. And
then exactly. Yeah, it's like this interim stage where, yeah, I totally feel like I'm just putting on an act every day.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Tanner? What was the imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Just like the nature of what we do here, it can be very surreal, and it can make you really wonder, like, do I belong here? And also, I think, you know, we come in contact with so many just, like, incredible people here. Like, I think everybody here was probably the smartest person in their hometown, right? And whether it's, like, you know, your friends or peers or leadership or graduates or, you know, you see the Hall of Fame and ISO Library, and there's just, like, so many incredible people that have come through here, and you're like, am I here too? Like, they let me do this? I mean, sometimes, you know, those thoughts go through your mind. And, yeah, I think also, like, the intensity of the program too, like, it can make you feel swamped and make you feel like you just have no idea what's going on sometimes, so.
Yeah. And, Chris, you finished.
Yeah, I feel like maybe the imposter syndrome thing more so for me is in regards to the military, kind of like how she was saying, just because in the past I never imagined myself being in the military. It was just something that, based on a series of events, led me here. Although when I knew I was going into this rate, I was very much thinking to myself all the time, like, I didn't imagine myself being able to know this language. Like, that was just seemed like not feasible, you know? But I passed and I'm here.
Congratulations, by the way. Yeah.
That's awesome. Big accomplishment.
How about you, Joseph?
So I think the imposter syndrome to me not only applies to a student, but especially being a Marine, because Marines are known as like warfighters. So like you said, I'm in here sitting in class 8 hours a day, kind of playing the role as a civilian, right? Going to college,
right.
But then I'm going to formations and afterwards and screaming kill and going on these like type of maneuvers where
exactly.
I'm like with a rifle and like kicking in doors and stuff. So
feels like a game.
Yeah, it's like two alter egos that I have to do both the best of my ability to at the same time. So it's definitely quite strange, but you adapt to it, of course, adapt and overcome, and you get used to it.
So I have to ask you, I was working with a Marine in my last job, and he would sometimes get these, like, he just couldn't sit still, like, he was done, you know, so he'd pull out his knife, and he'd be, like, showing me how McMap works and all these other moves. Do you get like that during the day in class?
I definitely get really antsy, like, I always just move around. It's kind of a good thing because, you know, it keeps you awake, so you're always paying attention. But it's also a bad thing where it's like you said, if you need to sit down and focus on something, it can be kind of bad. I don't think that's all Marines necessarily, but I think it's just knowing that you have to always have something in your mind so you're never getting caught being out of the loop type of thing.
Yeah, always focused. Okay. So let's talk about what you guys have binged, because I'm super interested in the different things that you've talked about. So, Chris, tell me what the most recent thing that you binge watched.
So, like I said earlier, I got hurt while I was here. And I broke my leg and my ankle, and I had a couple surgeries. And so I was kind of stuck in my room because they told me I couldn't walk for 4 months, and I was doing class still. So I stayed in class. And when this happened, I started watching Game of Thrones. And that show, I could not put it down. I started watching it, and I was like, wow, this is like the best show I've ever seen.
Okay.
And I was just blown away, at least up until season 8. And then season 8, I watched that, and I was just angry. Like, all that character building for 7 seasons just for them to destroy it. Season 8, I was so mad.
Yeah.
You should have asked. I could have told you when to stop.
I talked to people about it, you know, and they told me that it was going to be terrible. But I'm one of those guys who can't just, like, I can't put it down and then just be like, oh, I'm not going to watch what happens, you know? I just spent 7 seasons watching. I got to see how they destroy this.
Yeah.
And they did.
How about you, Joseph?
So I don't have a lot of time, on the other hand. But every now and then I'll watch like one episode of like, what I binge watched last was Demon Slayer. It's an anime, and I know like, I thought anime was like, oh, that's nerdy, I'm not gonna be a weeb, like all this type of stuff. And I was there's a reason why so many people like it, so I might as well give it a shot. And like, I dove into it head first, and like, I literally got hooked. Not to all of them, of course, but just Demon Slayer, I guess. So like, I would get off class and like watch one episode, and then I'd find myself watching like, okay, maybe one more. And then I'll have to be like, all right, now I gotta do my homework, I gotta put this down. But I just finished the last season, and now I don't think there's gonna be another one for like 2 years or something like that. So that's kind of disappointing, but yeah, I don't watch too much TV, but that's all I could say I have been watched.
Were you able to watch Demon Slayer in your language, target language?
Unfortunately, no. So my language doesn't have a lot of kind of subs or dubs, anything like that, just because it's not as popular as like some of the other languages are, I guess. So I just had to watch it in Japanese, but...
So is that the only like anime you watch?
No. So I've watched some of the other really, like, really popular ones, but I tend to stick to shorter ones because I don't want to get into something like Naruto and have to watch 900 episodes because and like nothing happens. Like,
I've
it's all the same.
Three times.
Yeah. So
you
I've seen
so Death good. Note. It's pretty short. That was the first anime I ever watched.
Insane.
And I was like you. I've been hating on my husband for years. I was like, no, but. During COVID, he was like, just do it. I was like, okay, fine. Oh, my gosh. It was so good. I got it's my crazy. Dad watching it. Yeah. It was intense.
It's only 32 episodes, yeah. So like, I didn't think really it would be good. That good. But I've seen One Punch Man, Death Note, and then Demon Slayer now.
All right,
but,
recommendation, Attack on Titan.
Yeah, I've seen
so
that.
It's so long.
100%.
Isn't it, like, super long?
It's only four seasons.
Okay.
It's not that long, though. It's super... They're still, like, they're coming out with the episodes weekly every Sunday right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the final season.
Oh, okay.
And it's just insane. Like, it is so good. 100%, 10 out of 10 recommend.
That's the worst feeling, though. Not even with just anime, but, like, when they're releasing episodes in a TV show.
Yeah.
And they leave you on a cliffhanger, and you're like, now I gotta wait an entire week.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's kind of a good thing at DLI, because then you can look forward. You're like, oh, I just gotta, like I said, you gotta make it to Friday. It's like, I just gotta make it to this Demon Slayer episode where Chandra's gonna slay this dude or whatever. But.
How about you, Nafisa? What was yours?
Okay, so like literally yesterday, I watched the entire first season of Euphoria, which I was honestly not gonna watch because I've been hearing people like say things about it. I was like, I don't know if I'm the right person to be watching something like that. But I watched it and I had the exact reaction I thought I would, which was not a great reaction, to be honest. But it was really good. And I was gonna start watching season two, and my husband texted me, "Don't you dare start without me." So I'm like, okay. And then another show that it's like releasing. So it released the first three episodes all at once, and I was like, nah, the rest of it's a teaser, right? But I started watching The Dropout about, oh my gosh, what's her name? Like Elizabeth something, who just, she was like world's youngest female billionaire 1 year, and then completely like negative net worth next year. But it's a crazy story. And so I started watching that, and it's really good. The acting is super weird. I love it. It really is. It's bizarre.
I've heard so much.
Huh?
This isn't anime, is it?
No. This is like a true story.
Okay.
Yeah, but the girl that plays it, what's her name? The actor, I don't know, but she's done like a lot of stuff. But she's just bizarre in this. I don't even know. Like, if I ever see her in anything else, I'm not going to be able to take her seriously at all.
Yeah.
More bizarre than Euphoria? Because I feel like that's like
Euphoria's acting is like on point though. Like they're playing a role and you like know their role, and they're all kind of psychotic in their own little ways, right?
Yeah.
But like so in The Dropout.
She like the Mark Zuckerberg, billionaire kind of.
Yeah, kind of like that. But so like she started this biomedical engineering company based on a fraud. Like it's completely fraud. She's absolutely like crazy.
A blonde? She's blonde?
Yeah.
She was in Ozark.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know her real
and
name.
She is just ridiculous. Like her acting in this, like she embodied this absolutely like neurotic woman, right? And I'm like, this is a normal person. Like she has done so many other shows and movies, and
she's a good actress.
Incredible. Yeah. And I'm like watching this, I'm like, this is probably the craziest like, not like actor, but like character I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly how she was in real life. Not the actor, but the person she's portraying, mm-hmm. Elizabeth. And I'm like, this is, like, and it makes you feel, like, Euphoria makes you feel things because they're literally putting graphic scenes in front of your face.
Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
But, like, in The Dropout, the way that everything is, like, manufactured. Mm-hmm. Like, the narrative, the way they're telling it, it just makes you uncomfortable. Like, in general, it makes you uncomfortable. You're like, what is she doing? Why? It's really good.
Speaking of uncomfortable shows, Tanner.
Oh, yeah. So I found out about 2 weeks ago, I guess going back, I definitely agree with Lance Corporal Villalobos over here that, like, you almost never have time for TV here, because it's basically, like, the easiest way to waste a ton of time there is. So I try to avoid it as I can, but I found out my girlfriend had never seen Tiger King. And that just, we couldn't, you know.
Unacceptable.
Wouldn't have been able to keep on with the relationship if that didn't change.
It's a pop culture issue.
So, yeah, I mean, I've never seen, I think, like, any piece of media so crazy, like, much less a true story than Tiger King. Mm-hmm. Just, like, and it's super well done, the way everything gets exposed to you, and you start meeting all these insane people that are, like, so larger than life and have this crazy career, and, like, they're so, you know, there's, it follows the three, like, Tiger Kings of, you know, the world, right? And then you see how, like, they're all different, but they're all kind of the same because they're all crazy people with tigers. And yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but he is in jail now. So,
yeah, it's like, I mean, a year. It's been long enough.
Yeah, so no, it's an excellent show. Super entertaining.
That came out in the beginning of the pandemic, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Everybody was wearing leopard print everything at that point.
Well, and so. I think, I mean, okay, you can call me crazy. I think this would be remembered as, like, a cultural phenomenon. Because absolutely.
I mean, it was like a mix. I can see what you're talking about. Because there was, like, a criminal aspect in it too, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
The lady.
Yeah, there's kind of like a murder mystery wrapped up in it. She allegedly killed her husband.
Yeah.
By which I mean definitely killed her husband.
Fed him to the cats.
Yeah. Fed him to the tigers. But yeah, no, like, if you can bring yourself back, like, I know we're, like, maskless now and there's, like, World War III, so we're not worried about COVID anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, bring yourself back to, like, what was it, March or April 2020?
Yeah.
Or I think maybe it came out in May. I don't remember. But it's, like, everything you'd seen on TV for the last, as long as you could remember, was COVID-related or, you know, like, oh, we're out of toilet paper. And, like, like, there was nothing going on besides, you know, worrying about, am I going to have a job, or, like, am I going to have toilet paper, like, what's going on with this disease, like, what's, where did it come from? And then, like, all of a sudden this show came out and it was just such a wonderful escape from, like, the horrors of COVID at the time that, I don't know, I think it had a huge impact on, like, our culture in that way,
because people weren't so afraid to go in quarantine because that just means that they get more time to watch Tiger King.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's back when I was like, oh, this is a great respite. And then here we are.
No, it definitely 2 years later. It definitely saved lives.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting paid unemployment while watching Tiger King. What else? What better world is there?
Okay, Chris, so let's talk about the best or most important thing you've learned at DLI.
I guess probably just that, if I continue to put my effort into trying to do something or achieve something, that I most definitely can. And I learned that through a lot of, hardships that happened to me since I've been here. Which a lot of them were just ridiculous. My leg and ankle being one of them, but I guess like I said, like, if I really want to achieve something, no matter, like, how difficult it gets, I can do it. And I think that was really relieving for me because I did want to give up a couple times just because of everything. And I was almost at my breaking point, but I just kept thinking, if I can just overcome this situation and get to the end and pass, I think I would be really proud of myself. And just know for myself, for the future even, if there's something, no matter how difficult I continue at, I can do it. And that was really important for me. So.
Okay. Joseph?
I'd say time management. Because if you don't know what you're doing with your time, at DLI especially, you're, A, not going to pass, and you're just going to become worse and not benefit yourself. So, like, one quote I live by, it's not necessarily time management in this aspect, but when you're here, you're constantly improving yourself, whether especially as a Marine, like, physically, mentally, like, every way you can think of. So, it's like, what a disgrace it is for a man to never be able to see the beauty and strength his body is capable. So basically, like, if you're not pushing yourself every day and striving to become a better person, whether it's in your language or at the gym or running or whatever your hobbies might be, like, you have one life and you're kind of throwing it away. So I'd say that's pushing myself is definitely what I've learned on top of time management, of course.
How about you, Nafisa?
Piggybacking off the whole time management thing. Before I came here, I was, like, neurotically reading reviews on Reddit as if that was going to help me at all. But I just wanted to, like, know what I was getting myself into. And the biggest thing that they said was, like, oh, you're going to have to schedule time to spend with your family. Otherwise, you simply will not. Right? And I was like, there's no way. Like, I love my husband. How am I going to just, like, throw him to the woods? Right? No. They were so right. Because there's, like, days where I'm so engrossed in my studies or I'm so stressed over one project or another or something that, like, my marriage is the absolute last thing on my mind. Not saying I don't care, you know, like, I do care. I just absolutely do not have time. And so if we don't schedule time to, like, have date nights or even eat dinner together, like, do something together, it's not going to happen. Absolutely not, because there's a million other things that are going on all the time. And I think part of it's because I did go from having, like, only one responsibility, which was college, going straight into this, which is college plus extra steps, right? There's just so much more that goes into it, and I have to actively go from, okay, I need to do my homework, but I also need to study what has already been done, because it's a language, it just builds up on each other, right? To, okay, I should actually work out if I want to pass my PT test. To, you know, I actually don't want to get a divorce, so I probably should go on a date with my husband, like, pretty soon. You know, and just juggling all of that, and then other, like, student leadership positions and everything, I feel like an Energizer bunny. But because I've been forced into some sort of, like, time management studies, honestly, I should get another associate's in, like, time management. that's definitely one thing that I've had to learn, like, by necessity, so.
Yeah. I have it too, Tanner.
Yeah, time management is huge, but one thing that's really stuck with me was something our group chief said to us on our, like, during one of our impro briefings, where he said, like, in order to get through this program, you have to check your ego at the door. And I guess he meant just, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, don't be afraid to be wrong. I mean, like, learning a language, you have to start out as basically an infant, right? And you're, like, babbling and learning an alphabet again, and you feel really dumb. And when you say stuff wrong in class, you know, like, you have to be willing, like, outgoing enough to, like, do that to be able to learn from your mistakes. And, yeah, also just be able to say, like, oh, hey, I can't do this on my own. I need to get a tutor, or I need to work harder, or whatever it may be. So, yeah, check your ego at the door.
You know, so along those lines, so, Joseph, let's say there's someone who is thinking about going into languages. What would you say to them? What would you say to them?
In terms of, like, how to prepare themselves?
Yeah.
So, obviously, I'm not going to say time management again. We've been harping on it for, like, 10 minutes. But
I mean, say it again. It's important.
It's one of the most important things you're ever going to do. But I'd say knowing that whatever is going to come at you here is going to pass. Like, something for me is, like, knowing if you have a big unit test coming up, or the DOPT, like, knowing you have a year to a year and a half to learn this language, and you could just fail this one test at the end, and then it's all over, nothing happens, you get reclassed, you're a different job, whatever. That's definitely intimidating, and it gets a lot of people, so you just have to look at it like baby steps, kind of like you were saying. You are, like, treat yourself like a baby in this step. Like, you're just going, you got to walk first, or you got to crawl first, and then you walk, and then you run. Like, don't worry about what's going to come in the future. Worry about what's in front of you, because it gets very overwhelming, and you will burn yourself out.
Chris, do you have any advice for potential student?
Yeah, to kind of go somewhat along with what he's saying. For me, what I noticed from myself, as well as my classmates from experience, one of the biggest things, as well as time management, is learning how to deal with your stress. Because so many times I'll see somebody who's in class and they're really good at the language, and you see them do well in class, they strive in class, and they get to a test, and they're so stressed about a test, and their nerves and anxiety is so high that, you know, they're listening to something and they don't hear the first 30 seconds because they're just so worried about not hearing it. And then they ended up making it like self-fulfilling prophecy type thing, you know. But that is super key, I think, is learning how to deal with your stress. Because for me, when I first started, I would be super stressed on the test, especially ICPTs, where I would be that person who would go in listening, and then I'd be like, oh, wait, we only had one listen for the level ones, and then I missed it. I don't know what I heard, and then I wouldn't do as well. And then actually after I got hurt, I kind of cared less. And that might have been because of the medicine I was on. But then I would go into tests, and I would be like, all right, I'm just going to take this test, whatever. And then that's when I started, my grades started getting way better. I started getting, like, A's on all my tests, and I was like, okay, like, I got this. I'm just too stressed on these tests. So definitely I think if you can calm those nerves and figure out a way to deal with it and not make it more difficult for yourself, that's really key in being successful here as well.
Okay. How about you, Tanner?
Yeah, I guess one of the big things I did coming through, because we have, so much time. I mean, I know the other branches do some too, particularly in the Air Force. I mean, I had about like a month and a half of just like, this is what it's going to be like. This is what you have to do. This is what people have gone through before. And I was just like, oh, none of that's going to apply to me. Of course. And yeah, I mean, I guess it can seem, you know, kind of like hokey and hand wavy while you're going through it, but you actually get a lot of really great advice, even if it doesn't seem like it at the time, through CPC and ILS and those kind of things. Listen to people's advice, I guess. But another, going back to what they said, I think one of the best things you can do, like before a test, like they were saying, is just take the night off. Like, I have gotten the best grades on tests when I just do something that I enjoy, go to bed early, you know, get a good night's sleep, and just go in like not stressed out. And I mean, you're not going to cram for something you were meant to be studying for 3 weeks for. You know, you're not going to make that drastic of a change overnight, so you might as well just chill.
Very good point. Excellent. Nafisa?
That's a great question. I've been, like, listening to you guys say all that, and I'm like, yeah, I agree. I don't know what to add. I mean, going off of what you said, like, letting your brain rest, right? Coming from a, like, psychological standpoint, the way your brain works, the way it builds neurons and things like that is from, like, digesting information. So if you're constantly, like, fire hosing your brain, it's not going to retain really anything, because you're not giving it time to, like, relax and, like, build those, like, new connections, whatever. And so I guess one thing, in addition to, like, giving your brain rest between, you know, cramming sessions and things like that, like, taking care of yourself, it's also going back to what you said about ego. I know, like, normally a 93 is not a B, right? In my course, a 93 is a B. I think that's, like, the first B I've ever gotten. And, I was like, what? No. You know? And it was, like, it hurt, like, my ego, and it kind of made me doubt my abilities in this course. And that was, like, the alphabet, like when we were just like learning the basics. I was like, wow, I suck, right? But it's about, no, I'm actually just an infant. Like, an infant's not going to write a grad paper in target language, you know? And so it's just about willing to know that it's a process and it's going to happen, and everything's set in stone. All you got to do is just be there, you know?
That's really funny you bring that up, because one of the metrics I used to use to keep myself motivated was saying, you know, like, all right, well, I'm in the third week of class. I can say much more than a three-week-old target language speaker could, so I must be doing good.
Or saying that, like, this is, it's kind of the same thing, but not really, but it's like, I always tell myself that somebody else has done this. So if somebody else can do this, then I can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the difference between someone else and me if I just put out just as much as they did?
Yeah. And I feel like here, at least, like, there are definitely curriculums set in place. Like, like you said, we are absolutely not the first ones to go through this. Like, what, we've been in business for so long now, like, absolute decades. How many graduates has there been from DLI? So people coming in, churning out languages left and right. And so me being here, fretting over a B, which, on, like, in any other grade would not be a B, it's so inconsequential, especially since, like, every week, it's actually astounding to me when you think about it. Like, you came in here, or I know I did, not knowing a single thing, right? And here I am, and I'll, like, just look at something and, like, translate in my head, like, automatically sometimes. And I'm like, wow, I do be speaking another language. Like, you know? And that's, like, and it doesn't even matter the grade sometimes. It's just the fact that you are constantly learning. Even when you don't think you are, just being in class, just going through the motions, your brain's like, yep, I got this. You know, and just having the faith in yourself to know that, yeah, like, absolutely you can do it. Because, like you said, there's no difference between you and anyone else.
And that's what makes DLI hard, is you can be a perfect 4.0 student, be a rock star at the course, pass the course, like, easy, right? But then you get to the DOPT, and, like, so what? You get all A's, you still fail, you know? Yeah. You don't get that 2-2-1 plus, and then you're gone. Like, it doesn't matter. You still don't get the degree, so.
Vice versa, though, too.
Exactly.
I've seen people, I had a buddy in a language, and I think his GPA, it might have just been the curriculum, but his GPA was like a 2.1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He DLPT'd and he passed.
Because some people are just good test takers, and other people, like, they can read the language, but they're just not good test takers. Like you were saying with the whole anxiety and nervous thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I could say, like you were saying, is utilize your peers. You were saying that everyone is, like, telling you what to do. You have about a month before you actually pick up your language.
You have a great, like, tutoring program in the Marine Corps,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
Like,
it's also
a requirement for your unit or however that works.
So when we first get here, we have to do 4 hours a week of just tutoring on top of class. And that's mainly because the Marine Corps is so small here. There's only, like, a little bit above 200 people, which is, like, crazy because there's, like 3,000 people in the Army, or, like, I don't know, you know how many people there are.
So, like, there's 200 just in my company.
I walk into the barracks and, like, I know everybody by name when I see their face. So, like, just being that close to everyone, it really makes you realize that you're not alone and you have friends here. And that's the biggest part of DLI, is making friends. Because you're going to drive yourself insane if you just sit in your room all day and study, and don't go out, spend some time with friends.
Yeah.
It's, people are here for you at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the biggest career changes, or just changes in my life I've ever been through. Because kind of growing up, I was never, like, the best student. I was super good in, like, all the way up to, like, middle high school, like, sophomore year. I was in, like, all honors, all A's, and actually, like, applying myself. But then I don't know if it was just my family or what happened, but, like, I just went into this, like, depressed down phase. And in junior and senior year, I just kind of, like, gave up and burnt out. And so, like, I ended up, like, dropping out of high school and going online and, like, doing my own thing. And I didn't know what I was doing in my life. I was just working at, like, Dairy Queen, you know, just kind of floating around, just seeing what life had to offer. And I was like, one day I was just like, I'm gonna just change my life. I'm gonna do something. And so I went to the Marine Corps recruiter and I was like, what can you guys do? And so then I took the ASVAB, blah, blah, blah. He sent me to MEPS and I went. I didn't even know I was gonna be a linguist until I went to boot camp. I remember, like, the intel lady just came up and she was like, oh, that's your DLAB score? And, like, whispered, and she was like, you're going to be a linguist. And I was like, she was just like, good luck, and walked away. I was like, what does that mean? Yeah. And then, like, I find out, I'm over here asking all my drill instructors, I'm like, what is Monterey? Like, what is this place? And they're like, I don't know, get out of my face. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just find out then. But like it's just crazy how you can think. One of the quotes I live by, another one, is like perspective is everything. So if you think you're not going to go anywhere in life and you're just going to sit there and feel bad for yourself, just like kind of zoom out and realize where you are and that you can change no matter where you're at. I mean, like coming from a person who dropped out of high school and like one of the hardest language courses in the world, like it's just crazy to think how far I've come.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Kudos to you. It's a really big deal.
It is. Okay, give me a rundown of what brought you into DLI.
So I went to college in Ohio to be, it was like an automotive school, studied automotive and high performance. And I've like worked with race teams and worked at shops, car dealerships, new, used, whatever. I really liked that. During the pandemic, a lot of that industry kind of dried up a lot. And I had kind of decided this was not like a forever type job. Like it's very, I mean, not that the military isn't. Actually, now that I mention it, I don't know what I was thinking. But, you know, it's very, like that job in particular is very hard on your body. Like hearing loss is super common. Respiratory things, super common. Like it's just not something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And kind of similar to your story, I went into the recruiter, took some tests, and they said, hey, this job's going to be great, which my preference overall, I wanted an air crew job. Like, I wanted to fly, knew I couldn't see well enough to be a pilot, so it was, like, the next best thing. And put on a bunch of air crew jobs. I didn't even have any clue what the airborne linguist job was. I took the worst test of my entire life at a MEP station in Montgomery. I remember I told like the Air Force liaison there, like, I feel like I just put my brain in a blender. Like, I don't, yeah, it was awful. But I guess, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. The most like absurd thing you'll ever do in your life. But yeah, I guess I did good on it. And then, I don't know. I guess I kind of found out about the linguist thing after the fact. But now that I'm here, like, I think it's one of the coolest jobs in the military overall. And I don't know. You know, you just see like some of the opportunities you can get through this program, and it's crazy.
Okay, so Chris, tell me how you got into DLI.
Similar situation with not really knowing what's going on with my job.
It's crazy. It's like the entire military.
Well, yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, and, you know, most of the time I noticed you were saying something similar. Like, I would ask people and they had no idea what I was talking about. Yeah. I don't know. But
it's a rare field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like I said earlier, I didn't really imagine myself in the military, but I when I went to the recruiter, I just wanted to, like you, get myself in a better situation and get myself started on a better track, on a better path. And so I went to the recruiter. I took the practice ASFAB. She's like, okay, you did pretty good. Let's do the ASFAB. I did that. She's like, all right, you pretty much qualify for all jobs. Here's this one. I was reading through them, and it's like stuck out to me because I knew it had something to do with language, but they were like, oh, I don't know, like anything more than you learn a language. I was like, okay. And like, and it's in California at Monterey. I was like, wait, I've lived in California my whole life and I've never heard of this place. But I was like, but it's in California, close to home. Okay, let's do it. And so then I took the D-Lab 2, and I also was like halfway through, I'm like, all right, I don't even know what this is. I'm just going to start clicking stuff. And I did really well on that, and my recruiter was surprised because I guess it's hard for people.
Very.
Yeah. And so I came here, and I started doing it, and the more I learned about it and what I'm going to be doing, I also started to think, wow, like, this is one of the probably coolest jobs I could have picked, and I don't think I would have wanted to do a different job. Because how many people could say, they come here in the military. Learning a new language, which to me is already really cool. I want to learn more, actually, because there's opens up so much more of the world to you when you do that. You learn a new language, and you get paid to do it.
And a bonus afterwards.
And you get a bonus.
And you even get, like, opportunities to work with, like, crazy things like the NSA. Like,
Yeah.
I remember thinking as a kid, like, oh, well, those guys are the big guys. And then, like, they're, like,
watching.
The people I'm working with are, like, in the NSA or, like, some crazy stuff like that. And I'm, like, this is crazy. Cool.
It's like Snowden. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
I would just like to note for, like, whoever is listening to this, the kind of questions that the D-Lab has real quick. You're given gibberish, an audio. That's literally gibberish. It does not exist. And you're asked to decipher the grammar structure.
It's made up.
That is the question.
Yeah.
Right? Here is gibberish. What is the grammar structure? I don't know. I have no idea.
It's quite literally like they made up their own form.
Yeah,
like
it literally is. It's a completely made up language. There's like no study assistance because you literally, there's no physical way for you to study for this test.
Yeah.
Like it gauges your quote unquote innate ability to pick up languages, whatever that means. Right?
Off the fly though.
There's a D-Lab for Dummies out there. My friend studied for it, and he got, like, a 140-something. And I was like, I didn't know you could study for this. I just got sent in there. But
yeah, I actually just recently found out.
Yeah. I didn't know. Because I took my ASVAB, and literally the same day, they're like, all right, yeah, so you're just going to go to the hotel right from here, back to MEPS tomorrow, you're taking the D-Lab. I was like,
because that's usually what it is. But yeah. I guess he got insight from someone else, and so he was
I don't know what test. I mean, I got, like, a 143 on it, too. Yeah. But I don't know how. I don't know why. I probably can't do it again.
You walk out of there feeling like I failed that, and then you're I did not fail that.
I was like, I don't think I was even reading English like correctly. Like the questions weren't even making sense to me at the end of that.
My favorite part was with the pictures.
Oh yeah. You're reading pictures. You're like, yeah. What does it say? What do you mean? Yeah. What do you mean? What does it say?
Okay, so real fast, tell me what got you into the military and to DLI.
Okay, yeah, so I was graduating with my degree, and I was like, you know, as much as I love this degree that I absolutely chose after three times, you know, changing my major, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I figured I could, like, do something in the meantime, and so I was like, yeah, why don't I enlist? My parents was like, wow, you should be committed, right? But I enlisted, and I knew going in that this was going to be my job, but I didn't really know what it entailed, and I did know that I was going to be getting a language, and I was like, that's cool, I guess. But coming here, I generally think I made the best decision, because, again, it's so versatile. I can use this anywhere. Like, whether I leave the Army or not, I can absolutely use this in future jobs. It's going on my resume, for sure. But yeah, that's pretty much how I got in. It was just kind of, like, I just graduated, and I was like, what should my next step be? And so here I am.